Gateway Market and Cafe is Des Moines' locally owned grocery and specialty food store, centrally located at ML King Parkway and Woodland Ave. Enjoy chef-crafted prepared foods, artisan baked goods, organic produce, hand-cut meats, local and international cheeses, wines, and craft beer. Gateway's Cafe is open for dine-in, carry-out, and delivery service 7 days a week. Stop by or visit gatewaymarket.com for more details. Gateway Market, good food, great community. Welcome to the Fallon Forum. Hey, thanks to our sponsors, including Gateway Marketing Cafe. Gateway is Central Iowa's premier good food store and brings together the world's finest products with Iowa-grown foods and passionate personalized service. If you're looking for quality foods with a community focus, check out Gateway Marketing Cafe. Thanks also to Central Iowa Realtor Joe Henry. Residential, commercial, land. Joe Henry's been covering all that for 23 years. He's also a leading community activist and a strong advocate for locally owned businesses. Contact Joe Henry at 515-208-7312. Hey, a quick shout out to the Des Moines Iowa Session for our bumper music. So this week I walked from Earlham to Winterset. That was a hard day, 17 miles. It was hot. Gravel roads. I spoke to a couple farmers. And they are very much concerned about what's happening with soybeans. Again, the U.S. usually sells a whole lot of soybeans to China. About half our crop this year has been zero. They're also concerned about sending the National Guard to U.S. cities. They don't see that as an appropriate use of the Guard. And they're also concerned about the cost. One of them said he'll never vote for Trump. He's a Republican. We'll see. I also ran into two hunters who offered me a ride. That was nice of them. And I landed in Winterset, a beautiful town, and a great reception at the home of Kayla and Mark Hawkins. I interviewed an evangelical Christian I met at the reception and a man involved with the Braver Angels. I'll play some of those interviews for you. I'm in Winterset, and I'm talking with Darlene Loyler. And she's a former teacher?
Yes, retired teacher.
Retired teacher and also an evangelical Christian. She tells me she's a Reagan Democrat. Thank you for coming to this gathering tonight, about 20 people here. And what are your concerns about where we're heading as a country with regards to democracy?
Well, it bothers me that much of what the founding fathers were afraid of, that somebody was like a con artist, they had con artists back then, and they knew about that, and a demagogue, they were really afraid. In starting a democracy, they were afraid that we would have somebody like Trump. And he different ones had come close to being elected like that, but he's been very dangerous. And what's really, to me, what bothers me the most is that they call themselves evangelicals. And I've been an evangelical since I was a child, 5 years old, and I've never come across anybody that acts like him or talks like him. It's just a bit, I think he's the opposite of what Jesus wants us to be, and that's what evangelicals are supposed to be.
And he's the opposite of most of the evangelical Christians I know in terms of moral integrity.
Yes.
So how does he get away with having so little integrity, yet being able to attract support from the evangelical Christian base?
I don't understand it myself. And he's a rich guy. He was a kind of a spoiled brat, rich kid. He thinks of himself as, he feels very sorry for himself all the time. And I don't understand. I mean,
he's very sad that he's not getting the Nobel Peace Prize.
Yes. Yes. But it also, it's like, you know, I don't know very many people who were born rich like he was. you know, and I don't understand how he's convinced so many Americans. I think they think that bad things are being said. When I turn on Fox News, sometimes they quote stuff that Democrats are saying, but I've never heard any Democrats say that kind of stuff. Mean stuff. And the Democrats that I know are pretty nice people.
Yeah, there are mean people at all points in the political spectrum, but I think the mean guy in chief is in the White House right now.
A bully.
Yeah.
He's a bully.
Yeah.
And the truth is, I wouldn't want to introduce my grandchildren to him. I wouldn't want him to come in my house because he's so mean.
But there are still people who support him, and I've met people just this past week who say, yeah. Even some of them are actually excited about him. Some of them aren't really particularly excited, but they feel he's doing things or going to continue to do things that they value. And do you think that's going to change as he, for example, militarizes, you know, American cities? And
well, here's the thing, too. You know, I'm from Los Angeles, but I lived out in the valley when it was full of orchards and that kind of thing. And I lived in New York, upstate New York, again, orchards, country. And it's country here. But I still have family out there. At the point that he was saying Los Angeles is burning, nothing was happening. They were going right by where some of the ICE people were and everything. And there were a few people there protesting, but nobody was yelling at anybody. There was nothing going on. There were when he sent in the National Guard, the guys were just kind of bored, you know, because there wasn't anything to do.
And now he's ramping that up. So we'll see what happens in terms of public opinion when he continues to unleash the National Guard in Portland and Chicago and Memphis.
And
we'll see.
And nothing's happening I can tell you, in Portland, I have friends there too. Nothing's going on. Whatever's happening is like within a block or something.
Yeah.
He's just lying about it. But I'm worried about Chicago because they sent Texans up to Chicago, and I'm not sure Texans and Chicagoans like each other.
Well, we're going to find out, I guess.
That may be a real thing.
Yeah. Darlene, thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me.
Thank you.
Okay, so I'm here in Winterset, Iowa. A great gathering of people, including Richard Tucker. He's with a group called Braver Angels. Richard, welcome to the conversation.
Thank you.
Tell us what Braver Angels is.
Well, Braver Angels is a national organization that was started in 2016 after the pretty fraught presidential election then. And a group of people got together in southern Ohio, half Clinton voters and half Trump voters, and spent the weekend talking through their political views and political differences. And out of that, the organization, at that time it was called Better Angels, got started. And since then, it's grown. It eventually changed its name to Braver Angels, but it's a national organization with a local presence. And the mission of Braver Angels is political depolarization and civic renewal. So basically, we try to get people together. We strive to get approximately equal balance between, I'll refer to them as blues and reds, you know, liberals or people who tend to vote Democratic, conservatives or people who tend to vote Republican, and have various programs. We have workshops. I'm the co-founder and co-chair of the Braver Angels South Central Iowa Alliance. We have alliances all over the country. Those are the local presence of Braver Angels. And what we do is we meet on a monthly basis and have programs of one type or another. Once in a while, we have a workshop. We have one coming up here in a couple of weeks, but most of the time we just get together and meet and talk about whatever the topic of the month is, and not necessarily, not at all, in fact, trying to change each other's minds about politics, but trying to express our, talk about politics, sometimes even pretty controversial topics, in a pretty civil way. And, you know, just the idea being to reduce affective polarization, you know, the kind of polarization that reflects a lot of personal animosity between people. We try to get people together to interact in a way that, you know, at least they can understand people on the other side of the political aisle.
How many participants nationwide would you say?
If I'm remembering right, I think it has a membership of about 15,000. And again, there are alliances scattered around the country. There's two alliances in Iowa that I'm aware of. There's one up in Ames, run by a guy named Ron McFarlane. And then there's the Braver Angels South Central Iowa Alliance, which tries to cover the eight counties south of Des Moines all the way down to the Iowa-Missouri border.
And would you say the participation has grown since the last election?
Since the fall?
Well, since 24. I mean, it seems to me like Donald Trump is increasing the polarization, and thus I would think maybe there's more people participating in Braver Angels.
I don't know that I can tell that. And maybe on a national basis, that's been the case. We've certainly, in our alliance, we've certainly had some pretty robust discussions. Donald Trump isn't the topic of every session we have, but he's definitely come up at different, you know, some months when we've had discussions. So yeah. Certainly the dynamic anyway is pretty robust since the election.
So if people want to learn more or get in touch with somebody with Braver Angels, what's the best way to do that?
You can go on the website, which is braverangels.org. Now, if they'd want to get a hold of me, they could email me at rtucker@braverangels.org.
Thank you so much, Richard.
You bet. You're welcome.
I'm here in Winterset with two high school students I've met. I had dinner with them, and we've been talking about politics and music. This is Tegan and Ava, and I'm glad you guys are willing to take the time to chat with me. Tegan, you're a sophomore, and you mentioned to me that, you know, most of your classmates tend to be supportive of Donald Trump. What's going on there?
Well, most of them just, they think in a lot of a, like, different way than I do, because I don't support Trump. And they just, they're really passionate in their beliefs and kind of, like, obnoxious sometimes. And the way that they say it and how they, like, the words they use to do it, it's...
Passionate is good, but what's obnoxious like?
It can kind of be, like, annoying, kind of, and it can be, like, kind of makes me feel like I can't say my own, like, opinions because I feel like I'll be judged for them.
How about you, Ava?
I'm a senior in high school, and I think I've dealt with these same people when during COVID time. I would actually had to wear my mask, and I would get, like, bullied for it. And those are kind of, like, the same people who are, like, against Biden. And not saying that they're any bad, but just how they present themselves and how they, like Tegan said, they are very obnoxious about their beliefs. And it definitely makes you feel like you can't really speak your own, but I tend to do still. And I definitely think that it's okay to have different beliefs, but we just got to be, like, communicate to each other and accepting to each other. So
I wonder how some of the students in your school, maybe Republican voters who have come from a farm background, feel about the current challenges facing soybean farmers in particular because of the Trump tariffs and the bailout of Argentina. Any thoughts on that?
Well, first of all, they probably don't know about it because most of them probably either don't watch the news, or the news that they watch won't talk about that, or they just want to ignore it because they don't want to believe that, like, the person who they think is this great person can do anything bad.
I think more and more people are going to be aware that while we usually sell, what, $12 billion worth of soybeans to China, we sold a total of zero this year. That's got to be having an impact on families financially as well.
Yes, definitely, because I think a huge reason why Trump supporters support Trump is because they think that he'll bring greatness to our economy, and that's, like, a big, like, show and like other things that that's not really what he's doing. And also, farmers, I think, should really educate themselves. Like, not all farmers. I guess the ones that are dependent on just the beliefs that they want to have should educate themselves in what's really happening. And that I think that would open their eyes, too.
So what's next for you? You're a senior. You're going to be going off to college or the workforce or something else. What's your next adventure?
So I'm passionate in many, many things. I'm a songwriter. I'm very passionate about civil rights and people, human rights. I'm passionate in the environment. I really love psychology and mental health. Right now I'm thinking to maybe get my PhD in psychology and become a mental health therapist, or I'll go the route with political science and human rights, or just any of these things that I'm passionate about. But I know I want to go to college and continue my songwriting, which is with my passions and feelings. So
the world is your oyster.
Yes.
How about you, Tegan? You're a sophomore. You're ways away from having to make that decision, but any thoughts on what your future might look like?
Well, I want to go into the medical field, and I want to be either an ear physician or maybe a pediatrician, because I really like kids, and I also really like doing thrilling things, so I feel like being an ear physician would be pretty cool. I also really want to help people, because I'd be able to go into the medical field, and also I'm interested in like science, so that's something. And I also like math, and so it's kind of all just mixed together into like a just into a job.
Cool. Well, I'm glad you like math. I don't. anyway, hey, great to talk with you. Thank you for taking the time to visit with me, Ava and Tegan, dialoguing here in the town square in Winterset in the shadow of the beautiful courthouse.
This is Ed Fallon in Winterset, Iowa, talking with residents there at the end of a 17-mile march from Earlham, Iowa. And I'll be back in a minute with more conversation on the Fallon Forum.
Thanks to Central Iowa realtor Joe Henry. Residential, commercial, land, Joe Henry's been covering all that for 23 years. He's also a leading community activist and a strong advocate for locally owned businesses. Call Joe Henry at 515-208-7312. That's 515-208-7312. You're responsible for a lot, and it's easy to become overwhelmed, to feel helpless, even hopeless. What's not so easy is finding your way back to feeling and functioning better. Psychiatrist Dr. David Drake helps individuals and couples throughout Iowa with the convenience and privacy of televideo counseling. Dr. Drake also prescribes medication when needed, and his services are offered on a self-pay, negotiated fee basis. If you need help, don't delay. Contact Dr. Drake at daviddrakefamilypsychiatry.com.
Welcome back to the Fallon Forum. Hey, thanks to our sponsors and partners, including Catholic Peace Ministry, whose focus is on nuclear disarmament, the war between Israel and Hamas, the war in Ukraine, and the need to end the permanent war economy. Learn more at CatholicPeaceMinistry.com. Thanks also to Westrom Optometry. Dr. Joel Westrom and his staff are fluent in English and Spanish. The clinic is open Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. until 5 p.m. and on Saturdays by appointment. That's Westrom Optometry. All right, so walk from Winterset to Greenfield, it's long. It's like 30 miles. So I had to break it into 2 days. First part was on Highway 92, busy. I was really happy to get off that and end up on gravel. And it was a total of 42 miles walked in 3 days. And I'm pretty sore, yeah. My point person in Winterset, Jean Walker, she's been socially and politically active her whole life, and she's been great about lining up contacts for me, and also drop me off at the halfway point between Winterset and Greenfield. Yeah, here's my conversation with Gene Walker.
Well, here I am at the Adair Madison County line, and having a chance to talk with Gene Walker. Gene, what are your thoughts on the the condition of America's democracy?
Wow, that's such a big question. Of course, I'm very, very worried. Just one thing after the other since our current president came into office the second time. Just every single day, there seems to be something that's an assault on our freedoms and just chipping away at our rights. And it seems like the whole point is to keep thinking of things every day that will make our lives harder.
And do you think some of the initiatives he's undertaken are having an impact on people in Madison County who might have supported him? Maybe some of them are starting to say, well, that's not what I voted for.
Yes, I definitely do. I mean, I know people who voted for him that are now struggling more with groceries and gas and things like that, that they expected would take an immediate downturn. And of course, I, you know, personally knew better than that it would be that way. But yes, I know people who are already suffering somewhat and regretting, but having a hard time. I also know people who won't admit that. So, you know, I guess more and more people have to suffer and be hurt.
And you mostly associate with the folks in the town of Winterset, which is a city of about, what, 5,000 people. Mm-hmm. But do you have much contact with folks in the rural part of the county?
I know a few farmers pretty well. And just in general, there is a lot of worry and concern right now, that's for sure. I can really feel it and see it.
And is that mostly because of the tariffs and the impact on soybean prices?
Right, exactly. That's very concerning. Something that folks who supported this current administration didn't expect to happen.
What do you think people listening to this program might take away from our conversation in terms of what they can do to make a difference?
I feel like all of us who are concerned, and hopefully that'll be more and more people, need to stand up and speak out, be brave. It's time to be brave and say how you feel and what you think with respect. Not getting into name calling or participating in all that ugliness, but just standing up and speaking out for what's right.
Great. Hey, thank you so much, Jean. Folks, talking with Jean Walker here in, well, actually literally at the Adair, Madison County line.
My host in Greenfield is Jay Howe, who put me up for the night. And I've known Jay since 1987. He also organized a nice get together at the hotel in Greenfield, a renovated hotel. And there were about eight of us there. And there was a fellow in the back, you know, he wasn't really part of our group, but he seemed to be listening. So I went up and talked to him afterwards. He's from Missouri, and I had a very good conversation with Jim Thacker.
All right, hey, I'm in Greenfield talking with a man from Missouri that met here at the Hotel Greenfield. His name's Jim Thacker, and Jim, welcome to the conversation.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
And you've got a military background.
I do, yes.
Tell us about that.
Well, I spent several years in the Army. I first went in 1985, and then 99 with some trouble I had. I was kind of medically released, and then when 9/11 happened, I went back in and served again until 2013.
You've got a bit of a walking history, too. That's kind of what united us in conversation. And I was very, very impressed with your reason for walking.
Well, I went in the military trying to do medical work. I'd already been to school, already been certified. Everything was good. And the Army has a way of changing your mind sometimes, and instead I ended up in the infantry and went on as a military sniper and a sniper instructor at Fort Benning, Georgia.
Okay, and then you, in part, maybe related to that work, you developed concern about kids with asthma.
I did.
And took a walk to raise funds and awareness to help kids with asthma.
Yeah, I actually, my older brother, when he was a child, was a horrible asthmatic. And he was a really good football player, all-state football player 2 years. But the problem was every Friday he would have asthma attacks. And we thought forever it was because they cut the grass on the football field, and come find out that wasn't the problem and that it was cottonwood blowing through the air in the fall. And I learned that once we identified his trigger, then we could get him through a whole football game without using his inhaler or getting shots at halftime or something else. And so later on, when I was working for a hospital in Lexington, Missouri, I decided to do a walk across Lafayette County, Missouri, where Lexington's located. And I was trying to think of a catchy name so that people would donate to it and I could buy asthma equipment for the kids in public schools there. And so I came up with Walking for Weezer.
I love that. I love that. Let me ask you this, too. With your background in the military, what are your thoughts on President Trump sending the National Guard to cities like Portland and Memphis and Chicago?
I don't like it, and I don't think that is what the National Guard or the military in general is for. You do swear an oath to defend the country against all enemies, foreign and domestic, but I would hesitate calling American citizens domestic enemies. And so I'm not a big fan of it.
And some observers have said that he's eventually going to try to cite the Insurrection Act and allow the federalization of the National Guard to be used in all kinds of domestic capacities. Thoughts on that?
Well, I've heard that, and you read different things, and at times he seems like he's not going to, and then at times he kind of brings it up almost as a sidebar in some of his conversations. To me, I feel like he is trying to surround himself with people who are like-minded, like him, that just agree and will push the button on anything he says, to include, you know, going against the Constitution, going against things that have been established as norms in the United States. The United States right now, I think, is a broken country. If you travel abroad, you realize that it's been a broken country for a long time.
How do we fix it?
I don't know. I'm not a politician, and I'm not smart enough in politics to know that, but I think we start off by honoring the Constitution and by realizing that when the Constitution was written by the incredibly intelligent and brave men that wrote it, they had no way of knowing there would be such a thing as AI or, that everybody in the country seemed like would own a gun or things like that. They didn't look that far ahead.
Nor could they have.
Nor could they have. They had no idea. It's like I can't sit here today and tell you what technology is going to be available 200 years from now.
I'm a little afraid to find out. Well, I won't be around, and neither will you.
No, I don't plan on it. If I am, no one will be more surprised than I am.
Jim, thank you so much for joining us.
You bet. Nice to be here.
From Greenfield, I had I'm going to call it easy, 10-mile walk to Orient. Easy because it's a lot shorter than 17 miles, a lot easier. And my host there was Pastor John Van Nostrum, and had a good conversation with him as well.
I'm here in Orient, Iowa, with Pastor John Van Nostrand, and we just had a great time in Corning. The town has done an amazing job at beefing up its main street and all kinds of great stuff there, including a wonderful restaurant.
Yes, the Primrose. It's been there for 7-8 years. It's superb. Their slogan is big city dining in small town Iowa. It's perfect. I've never had anything bad there, Ed.
Yeah, that's an apt description. So you're a pastor here at a church in Orient, Methodist Church. And what would you say is what is the feeling among your congregates about the condition of our country right now? What some of us see as a slide toward authoritarianism. What are your thoughts on that?
The people I've talked to over the years, regardless of who's in power or what party's in the White House, I think Orient people just want some confidence, some security, some future that small town Iowa, let alone small town America, still has a viable future. They still want it to be a great place to work, raise a good family, and have some fun at the same time.
And do you think they see the Trump administration as helping or hindering that dream?
Well, being you know, Iowa, Southern Iowa, you know, heavy agriculture economy. Yeah, I think there is some concern with how the tariffs will affect agriculture.
Any other concerns? How the administration is handling immigration, for example?
Well, not necessarily immigration. I know Vice President Vance has made references to families having more kids. You know, population loss in Western Iowa, Southern Iowa, it's an issue. So it's good that Vance, you know, is encouraging families. And fortunately, I've had two baptisms so far this year in my church in Orient.
And that's not a lot.
So it'd be great to have some support for, you know, some family, you know, the tax breaks, whatever can be done to encourage families to stay and thrive in Southern Iowa.
One thing that's been remarkable to me is the prevalence of wind turbines here in Adair County. Mm. What I've heard is that there could be as many as 450 turbines in one county, and it is astounding to see them. There was a lot of controversy around wind turbines in years past. What's the local demeanor toward them at this point?
Okay, I wasn't here when the turbines first were installed, but the impression I get now is, okay, we've got enough. Let's move on. And I know there's some surrounding other counties in Southern Iowa where they're just getting them for the first time, or they're expanding them. And I think people are trying to find that happy balance. Mm-hmm. How much is enough, and where can we put them so we still think we don't, every time we turn around, we're going to see one.
Of course, Trump is no friend of wind turbines.
Correct. That is true. That was one of the first things he did after he got into office. He made some statements about that. Yeah, you are right.
Is that making any impression locally, where people are kind of accepting him at this point?
Well, I think they were already here long enough. Whatever Trump said, it was really wasn't that important. Yeah. They're already here. They're up and running. So, yeah. And we're here until the companies don't want them to be.
Well, John, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. It's always a pleasure, Ed.
John Van Nostrum, folks, a pastor here at the United Methodist Church in Orient.
Well, that's days 9 and 10 of the Save America March. This is Ed Fallon. I'll be back with you in a minute to talk about my visit to Creston, a larger rural community of 7,500 people in south central Iowa.
Catholic Peace Ministry is an independent nonprofit guided by an ecumenical board representing many faith traditions. Founded in 1980, Catholic Peace Ministry focuses on nuclear disarmament and ending the wars between Israel and Hamas and Russia and Ukraine. CPM's overarching concern is the need to end the permanent war economy, which must be challenged if we are to achieve lasting peace and justice. Learn more at CatholicPeaceMinistry.com.
At Westrom Optometry, Dr. Joel Westrom and his team provide a variety of services, including comprehensive eye exams, children's eye exams, and LASIK co-management. Whether strictly utilitarian or a fashion statement, your comfort and vision are Westrom's primary concern. Dr. Westrom and his staff will work closely with you to determine the best solution for your eyes, prescription, and lifestyle. Services are provided in English and Spanish, and the clinic is open Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. till 5 p.m. and on Saturdays by appointment. That's Westrom Optometry, located in Des Moines East Village. Welcome back to the Fallon Forum. Hey, thanks to our partners, including Story County Veterinary Clinic, where Dr. Kim Holding has been caring for all creatures, great and small, for over 30 years. Learn more at Story County Veterinary Clinic's Facebook page. Thanks also to Architecture Biosynthesis. Owner Mark Clipsham asked that you use the most energy-efficient methods you can afford and the greenest, longest-lasting materials available. Examples of Mark's work can be found at architecturebiosynthesis.com. All right, so a 13-mile march to Creston, a pretty nice day for it, and My host in Creston is Katie Davidson. She's the owner of Hot Air Brewing, and we have a good conversation. Hey, I'm talking with Katie Davidson. She's a business owner in Creston, Iowa. She owns a Hot Air Brewing, and I've known her a while, and she's kind enough to host the finale of my 11th day walking from Orient to Creston. And we'll be having a little gathering here tonight, and then I will play some music. So what's it like being a small business owner in a town of what, 8,000 or so?
Yeah, 7,500.
Yeah.
It's interesting. So I've lived in Creston. I grew up here, and my dad owned a business here when I was growing up, so I kind of knew what I was getting into when I decided I wanted to do this. And it's been really fun raising my daughter in a small business in Creston and seeing the parallels of her getting to grow up with a community of people, of regulars who come in and get to watch her grow up, because she was 8 when I opened the business and she's almost 13. So there are a lot of people who have seen her go from just this little girl to this teenager, and it's really cute. And that part of owning a small business in a small town is fun and joyful and really special. And then there are the things that are not so fun. Really outside of those regulars, it can be hard to make ends meet, and you don't want to rely on the same few dozen people to pay all your bills every month, because if somebody goes on vacation, somebody breaks a bone and has to be laid up for a few weeks, somebody joins a cornhole league and can't come to trivia for a month, you don't want that to impact your bottom line so much, and it does, and that's kind of hard. And you also really have to focus on marketing outside of town if you want to bring in new customers.
So what part of your business would come from out of town?
So when we were first open, I would say probably 50% of our business came from out of town. It was kind of mid-COVID, and there were a lot more people driving around the country. People were doing the whole van life thing because they felt like the only way to really leave their house was to be in their vehicle and drive around. And so there were a lot of people finding us because we're kind of 30 minutes from I-80 and 30 minutes from I-35. So they were just Googling breweries and they would come and find us. And we had people in here from all over the country. And that's really slowed down quite a bit. So we do get people from Des Moines. I would say we get more people from Omaha, actually, than Des Moines. Omaha counts of bluffs.
So what percentage of your business is from Creston itself?
Well, at this point, about 90% of the business is from Creston. The business has really slowed down in the past year. We were really kind of ramping up outside sales. We were doing a lot of self-distribution. We were on tap at about 50 different places. And that all really kind of slowed down. I think beer consumption has slowed down quite a bit just, nationally overall.
Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
That's a really great question. I think it just depends. I think what needs to ramp up is people having a place to go that is their third space. So that kind of place where they feel like it's their home away from home, outside of work and outside of their home. And that's what I think the brewery is for a lot of people in town. They come here for trivia. They come here to listen to live music, and they can just come and hang out, read a book, do a puzzle. And that's what I've always wanted this to be for people, is that third space.
And Creston is a county seat in Union County, which is a county that fairly consistently votes Republican. And has partisan politics ever been an issue affecting your business?
Yeah, I'm pretty vocally progressive. Just when it comes to wanting more diversity in our community, wanting to be supportive of marginalized folks in our community, and that doesn't tend to align with conservative politics usually. And so I kind of have a reputation of being somebody who's a radical liberal, which if someone had a conversation with me, they probably wouldn't think that, but people don't bother to do that usually. So they just decide that they don't want anything to do with me and haven't bothered to come in and talk to me or try my beer or step foot in my business.
And I assume that's a fairly small percentage of the population of the city?
Who think like who are progressive.
Katie's a radical liberal. We're not going to go to her business.
Oh, no, it's probably a large enough amount that it's affected my ability to be successful, I would think.
That's sad.
It certainly is. Yes, yeah. I would agree. Yeah.
And so I know there's a current issue of concern here with a teacher who posted on her Facebook page, I believe, that it was not. She said she was sad to see the death of Charlie Kirk, but she thought it was maybe a blessing that his rhetoric wasn't going to be out there anymore. And now she's being threatened with being fired.
Yep.
And this reminds me of an even more severe issue on the other side years ago, where I believe crosses were burned.
Yeah.
And a black student was specifically named in that incident, and those kids who did that got off pretty easy.
Yeah, I don't think anything ever really happened to those kids. I think that there were a lot of people in our community who are kind of calling for this teacher to be fired now, who were very up in arms about those kids having their free speech violated at that time. So it's really interesting how people's opinions have changed in just a few years. And what's interesting to me really is that our superintendent is pretty vocally disparaging of a certain segment of the population that would probably include me. And I'm a substitute teacher and have taught in this district for several years. And tweets disparaging things to about people in his community, people who he would walk by in the street. And that doesn't seem to bother anyone. And this teacher makes a comment on a post about someone that none of us have ever met, none of us have ever had a conversation with, and they're calling for her to be fired. And I just find it really interesting that we would rather vilify someone over a comment about someone that none of us have met rather than hold someone accountable for the disparaging things he says about people in our own community. I think it's just interesting.
So I assume the school board is okay with the superintendent making those comments, and also okay with reprimanding or even firing the teacher who made what, by comparison, is a fairly innocuous comment.
What? Sorry, can you rephrase?
I'm assuming there's a school board behind. There's, you know, in the background here, that is okay with the superintendent making such comments.
Yes.
And is okay with a teacher, again, who made a very mild, and actually, to be clear, she apologized even for the mild comment she made, and that still doesn't seem to be enough to satisfy the superintendent who wants to get rid of her. So is the school board okay with that?
The school board will do what the loudest voice wants the school board to do. And right now the loudest voices are calling for the teacher to be fired. So that is what the school board will do. And they'll back down if it becomes a First Amendment case and they are told they need to rehire her, they will. But in this case, they will do what the loudest voices are telling them to do.
And who are these loudest voices of which you speak?
People on Facebook, mostly. And people who are calling the school and saying that this teacher is horrible and she's indoctrinating our kids and blah, blah, blah. And they're not people who have any basis for understanding what she is actually teaching kids. And probably she's an English language arts teacher, and they probably haven't read books since high school. And it's really unfortunate because she's an excellent teacher and she's an excellent member of our community. She's one of the kindest individuals. And I think that her comment was rooted in the fact that she saw a lot of the hatred that stemmed from
Charlie Kirk's posts.
Yes. And that hatred is now being turned back on her, and that's kind of what the irony is. And the people who are calling for her to be fired don't seem to understand that she saw a potential end to the hatred, and and now they're throwing that hatred back on her.
And so to what extent do you see this divisiveness enabled by what's going on in Washington, D.C. with the actions of President Trump?
I mean, even at Charlie Kirk's memorial, Erica Kirk was trying to say we needed to be divided. She was trying to forgive the man who killed her husband. And in the next breath, Trump was saying we need to hate our enemies. I mean, he's the least Christian person that you could possibly find. And yet these people who claim to be Christian idolize him and can't seem to disconnect their worship of him from the fact that they're worshiping this false idol. And it's really, really disturbing to me. I was raised Christian, and I'm very, very disturbed by all these people who go to the church I was raised in who are now trying to hold these Trump support rallies in my community. It's terrifying.
What church were you raised in?
I was raised in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod here in town. I no longer attend.
Well, there's a lot to process here.
Yeah.
And do you see any pathway forward for reconciliation within the community where people on different sides of some of these conflicts might find common ground, might realize that if we're going to value Iowa Nice, we have to start practicing it in a rather broad-minded way?
Yes, and I think that it really needs to start with people getting out of their bubbles, regardless of what those bubbles contain. That's the one reason why I moved back to Creston. I was in my university town bubbles, and I realized that I was judging, and I wasn't being gracious, and I wasn't having empathy, and I was being somebody I didn't really like because I was surrounding myself with voices that were saying the things that I wanted to hear and not necessarily the truth. And so I moved back to my hometown, and now I try to talk to people who believe things that are different than me, and I would love for people to do the same. And that was kind of why I wanted to open this brewery, because I wanted people to try something new, and I thought that if people could try a different beer, then maybe by extension they could try a different food, and maybe by extension they could try to have a conversation with someone who looks different than them, and then maybe we could all exist harmoniously eventually.
Have you seen any progress?
For a while, yeah. Yes, for a while it was great. We had lots of great conversations. I had people from all walks of life in here. I had conservative Republicans coming in and chatting with more left-leaning Democrats, and we would have great conversations, and it was respectful conversations. It was good space. That was prior to this administration, though, and things have kind of gone downhill since then.
So even since the election last year, during the initial months of the second Trump administration, things have gone downhill.
Oh yeah, yep. I would definitely say that it's pretty noticeable how there are some people who used to come in regularly, and they've just kind of fallen off the radar in the last 6 months.
I will tell you that during my walk, I've walked over 130 miles already, and I've had a lot of conversations with people on different points of the political spectrum, and including quite a few Republicans, and I think I only talked to one who was really content with the way things are going. And even when it comes to the economy or sending the National Guard to cities, people aren't real happy with those things.
No, I don't think there's a way you could be happy with those things if you believe that they're really happening. And I think that's where any of us kind of, we just kind of need to make sure we're paying attention and trying to get our news from unbiased sources. I don't watch the news. I just can't watch the news. And that's really funny because a lot of people would accuse me of only watching certain news, and it's like I don't watch that news any more than you do.
Yeah.
But yes, I think that if you're paying attention at all, you are not very happy with how things are going. And I think that at this point, it's not about who you voted for. It's about what you do now. So.
Well, Katie, thanks so much for joining us. Folks, we've been talking with Katie Davidson, the owner of Hot Air Brewing in Creston, Iowa. My stopping point on day 11 of the Save America March.
This is Ed Fallon, folks, and we'll be back in a minute with more conversation on the Fallon Forum. Architecture by Synthesis provides planning, design, and design-build services for high-performance, low-maintenance, affordable homes and buildings. Owner Mark Clipsham asks that you use the most energy-efficient methods you can afford and the greenest, longest-lasting materials available. Examples of Mark's work can be found at architecturebysynthesis.com. That's architecturebysynthesis.com.
At Story County Veterinary Clinic, Dr. Kim Holding has over 30 years of experience working with all creatures, great and small. Cat, dog, horse, cow, elephant. Well, if you've got a pet elephant, you may be in trouble. Kim's clients stick with her year after year because they know she'll do right by them and their pets and farm animals. So give Kim a shout to keep your animals happy and healthy. Call 515-232-8766. That's 232-8766.
Welcome back to the Fallon Forum. Hey, thanks to our sponsors, including psychiatrist Dr. David Drake. If you live in Iowa, wherever you live in Iowa, Dr. Drake can help through the convenience and privacy of televideo counseling offered on a self-pay negotiated fee basis. Contact David Drake, familypsychiatry.com. Hey, I'd like to welcome Richard Maynard to the studio. He's with the Iowa Stage Theater and a production in Des Moines. Maybe some of you have had this elsewhere in the country, those who are listening on other stations. Buried Child. When I heard the name of the production, I thought, oh my God, what is this about? Anyway, Richard, tell us a little bit at what you can reveal without giving away the whole story. What's Buried Child?
Well, Buried Child, it's both literal and it's metaphoric, too, the title of it. There's a lot buried in this Midwestern family. The play was written in 1978, won a Pulitzer Prize for literature, so it was very, very well regarded at the time. I think it still plays
and
now.
The author?
The author is Sam Shepard.
Okay, oh yeah, sure.
Yeah, Sam Shepard. And people might know that, know his name. Probably his most popular commercial play was True West. But anyway, here's how I'd like to describe it. If you think of a Norman Rockwell painting.
Right, beautiful.
Buried Child is the exact opposite. It's the exact opposite. This was a family, as you'll find out in the play, that was once a typical farm family, doing quite well. The character I play is Dodge, who's the patriarch of the family, says, you know, the farm was producing enough milk to fill Lake Michigan twice over. Exaggeration, of course. But then something happened. Something happened in the family, and it's really about how secrets, how things that don't get talked about can just be so destructive to a family, and it really is in this one. So, and of course, I don't want to give away too much here about it, but the character I play, for instance, Dodge, he's pretty much given up. He's pretty much given up. He smokes, he drinks, he watches TV, and that's about all he does until this day.
What year is the action in the play taking place?
Same as what it was originally, 1978.
Okay, so it's kind of a precursor to the farm crisis.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Okay. Absolutely a precursor to the farm crisis. And, and just how the breakup of the family. And, of course, in Sam Shepard's way, it's pretty extraordinary how it breaks up. A son comes back who they haven't seen in 20 years, and you're not ever clear as to what happened to him, but somehow he's being a high school star athlete and all this promise has become a broken man. And it's just a lot of discovery between it. Yeah.
Is there any relevance in the play for the current times we find ourselves in this year?
Yes, I think so. Look at, how our democracy is breaking away. If you kind of compare that to your a safe home, and how that's starting to, make everybody very nervous and everybody just disoriented. It's this disorientation that happens in the play. So I think it absolutely is things people can relate to. The uncertainty that happens in this play of what's going to happen next.
So the family of the play could be kind of a precursor, in a metaphorical sense, to what our country is experiencing.
Exactly. It could be. Yes, it could represent the whole country.
Yeah. Well, it says volumes, too, that a play written back in 1978 is still being eagerly received and performed widely.
I think this is his best play that he wrote, and it's that you can say that. That's what I love about the classics. They give you a window into who we were and who we are today, and this one certainly falls into that. And when are we doing it? Should I say
yeah,
that?
Go yeah. for it. Yeah.
Okay, we're at the Stoner Theater. If you don't know where the Stoner Theater is, it's inside the Civic Center, the Des Moines Performing Arts. It's this small theater, downtown Des Moines.
Right.
Yes, right on 3rd and Walnut. And we open Friday, October 17th, and we play through the next weekend on October 26th. You can find out how to get tickets and how to buy tickets at our website, which is iowastage.org.
Richard, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me, Ed.
Folks, talking with Richard Maynard about the play, the Iowa Stage Theater production of Buried Child. All right, hey, at this point, I'd like to welcome Kathy to the program, and we're going to talk about, we always do farm and food, right? Today, it's leeks, which we've had a great harvest of this year.
Well, it's our best ever, and we figured out some better things to do in planting, so we planted them inside in mid to late January.
Yeah,
and
really early.
That helps those bulbs get nice and strong before we plant them outside in mid-April.
And some people think you should trim them as they grow indoors under lights.
We do that with onions.
Yeah,
but some people are saying they don't see a difference, so I think it's up to you.
Then the idea is that it grows a stronger root.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You want to keep enough top on it, though, because when you plant them, you dig a trench and you plant them kind of shallow in that trench, and then you keep adding the soil around
very
them, and
that
blanches them and keeps that nice white stalk.
We transplant them about April, so mid-April maybe?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's nice to have so many to enjoy, because we can start to branch out from our usual leek and potato soup when we are using leeks. But we use them a lot like onions. However, they're fun because they're a lot gentler flavored than onions. They're mild and they're sweet.
Maybe even our co-producer Sherry would like them.
No.
No,
Sherry. I don't think we would. Sherry, maybe we'll sneak them into some food, give it to you, and not tell you they're in there.
And it's important to blanch them. That may be one reason the flavor is milder, too. You've got to kind of mound up the dirt to keep them
in the growing.
Yeah,
in the growing stage, right? Not a culinary blanch. We're not blanching the leeks.
So it was one reason they did well this year, all the rain we had?
Absolutely. We had a very rainy August, correct?
Mm-hmm. Well, July.
July and August. But we also were more diligent about watering. And we had planted those in the same bed with our celery, which is also a big water hog. And actually, I started blanching the celery this year for the first time with a simple newspaper wrap around it. And that really made them successful. But, getting that nice, long stock is a real joy. And I did harvest those when you were out on your walk just the other day, Ed. Yeah. And it was fun to pull so many great big, hearty.
And so what's your favorite way to cook them?
Well, I have yet to find out. I'm excited to try new recipes. I want to...
I'm happy to be your guinea pig.
Well, I want to try more quiches. And I know leeks are a classic part of any good quiche that you would make, and I wanted to have some more variety of quiche.
And to be clear, I do cook leeks too. I tend to just saute them for a long time in butter, maybe a little olive oil, and salt, pepper, and I might add some tarragon or thyme or one other nice herb, but those are pretty good too. But I'm excited to see you branching out and experimenting with new leek things.
Well, we've got some fresh still in the fridge. And they'll store for at least a week. If I don't use all of those, I will freeze those in a similar way that I did the ones that I've already put in the freezer, except I've put the ones in the freezer already that I just chopped thin.
Right.
are sliced thin and
you could also cook them and then freeze them, right?
I think the next batch I do, I'm going to saute just gently till they caramelize and they get so buttery.
So other than awesome flavor, is there any nutritional value of any unique aspects to leeks?
It depends what nutrients you're looking for. It has almost 10 times the amount of iron compared to onions.
Wow.
And it has about double the vitamin C compared to onions. It also has more niacin, folates, so vitamin A. And so it's a really nice vegetable.
Okay. Yeah. So, we'll keep working to find new ways of enjoying leeks. But I think the traditional leek and potato soup is one of the awesome standbys. Hey, Kathy, thanks for joining us. Thanks to those who took the time to talk with me this week on the Save America March and to those who agreed to be interviewed. Thanks to our production team, Sherry Herdina, Forrest Detterman, Charles Goldman, Kathy Burns, and myself, Ed Fallon. Thanks to our local small business partners, Gateway Marketing Cafe, Story County Veterinary Clinic, Westrum Optometry, David Drake Family Psychiatry, real estate agent Joe Henry, and Architecture by Synthesis. Thanks also to our nonprofit partners. And finally, thanks to the Des Moines Irish Session for our bumper music. We'll be back next week with another hour of cutting-edge talk radio.